Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balaba Jiri Badhari Gopi Jana Balaba Jiri Badhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banatyari Yamuna Tira Banatyari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai, Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Thank you.
Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramamsi Paribrajakacharya Astatara Sadasu Sri Man. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Nityalila Pravistaram Vishnu Pad, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Anantakota Vaishnava Vrinda, Ki Jai. Namacharya Haridas Thakur, Ki Jai. Prem Seiko Hosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sir Dwaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda, Ki Jai. C.C. Radha Krishna, Gopa Gopinath, Shama Kunda, Radha Kunda, Giri Gobadan, Ki Jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham, Ki Jai. Sri Mathura Dham, Ki Jai. Sri Navadvip Mayapur Dham, Ki Jai. Ganga Mayi, Ki Jai. Jamuna Mayi, Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Tulsi Maharani, Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda, Ki Jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Gaur Premanandi. Hare Krishna. So, welcome to the first segment of the program for Prabhupada's festival here in Los Angeles. That's 26th of May. So for this portion, we're going to talk a little bit about Prabhupada's pastimes concerning prasadam. It's one of the more popular aspects of our Krishna consciousness movement, and deliberately so. It was one of the things that, or one of the foundation principles of Prabhupada's creation of ISKCON, was the distribution of Krishna prasadam. This seminar is called Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam, and all the materials that I'm presenting, these are all largely gathered from the period when I was fortunate enough to be able to travel with Srila Prabhupada. That was from late November 75 through till March of 77. So this is not meant to be a complete, you know, presentation of everything Prabhupada ever said on a topic, but it's meant to give a synopsis so that you can get a good look and see different aspects of devotional life from different angles of vision, how Prabhupada was applying the philosophy in many practical situations. So what I've done is I've made a kind of a thematic approach rather than, you know, a chronological one, because my diary, of which this is the fifth volume, this has come out just a year and a half or so ago. This is based on a handwritten diary that I was keeping when I was traveling with Prabhupada, and gradually we're kind of putting that out in a multi-volume series. Each volume covers about 2 months. But if you read the, you know, chronological, then it's the topics are kind of scattered throughout. So what I decided to do was get all the information on any particular topic, like chanting or book writing, prasadam, cleanliness. Last couple of nights here, we've been talking about health issues, living in the Dham, deities and temples, etc., etc. There's so many different areas of devotional life. And whatever Prabhupada said or did in connection with those, then I've tried to compile that in some kind of sequential order. So I thought it would be nice today we could talk a bit about the topic of prasadam, because it was so important to Prabhupada's movement. So one example where Prabhupada mentioned this about, you know, how prasadam was the basis of his movement was when he arrived at Pittsburgh Airport on June the 21st, 1976. This was on Prabhupada's last world tour. He'd been here in L.A. for the first 10 days of June. Then we went to Detroit. And from there we went to Toronto. And then we came down to New Vrindavan. So Prabhupada arrived at the Pittsburgh airport. And we got in the car. It was a 90-minute drive to New Vrindavan. As soon as we sat down, Kirtananda Maharaj produced a bag of prasadam that they'd cooked in the kitchens there in New Vrindavan. So this was something that he did whenever he went to see Prabhupada. He would bring, you know, some pakoras or some sandesh or whatever they were cooking, and he would bring that to give to Srila Prabhupada. In December of 75, he had come and arrived in Bombay, and he brought some new Vrindavan prasadam with him. So again, now when Prabhupada was coming to New Vrindavan, he presented him with this nice prasadam. So I thought, you know, Prabhupada, he'll just look at it. He might take like a morsel just to honor it. But instead of doing that, he actually had us take all the prasadam out of the bag and spread it out on the seat of the car. And then he sat there and he ate, you know, quite a bit of everything. And he really enjoyed it. So he was kind of complimenting them that, you know, they've learned how to do this very nicely, cook this nice prasadam. So the ride was comfortable, and as we progressed smoothly along the highway, Prabhupada kept up a running conversation. He reflected on the fallen condition of modern man, telling Kirtananda Maharaj his comparison of the dogs running on four legs and man's running on four wheels. So when we were in Hawaii, he came out with this little phrase. Sukadev was the temple president at that time. We had a month in Hawaii. So Prabhupada, you know, he would go down to Magic Island in the morning for his morning walk. And we'd zip down the highway, 70 miles an hour. And Prabhupada would look and see all the cars, you know, zipping up and down, everybody hurrying to work like this. And then he came out with this comparison. He said, what is the difference? He said, the dogs are running on four legs. They are running on four wheels, but the business is the same. So now he told it again to Kirtananda. He said that the only way to save them was to start with the basics, and then after some time, when they become a little purified, give them some philosophy. He reminded Kirtananda that this had been his program right from the very beginning, because this was exactly 10 years, practically to the month, when Prabhupada had, you know, gathered up these few young men in New York in 1966 and formed ISKCON. And in fact, just after this, we went to Washington, and in early July of 76, we had ISKCON's 10th anniversary. They baked a big birthday cake, and there was a program for that. So Prabhupada was reminding him that, he said, you've all got this experience. This is the only way. I started this movement on this determination. I'll give them prasadam, nice chanting, and they will not come. They must come. That was my determination. And I began with this. So this is the only way. Give them a chance. Now, no talk. Please come. Chant and dance with us and take Krishna prasadam and go home. No talk. Just feed them and chant. That's all. Kirtananda reflected that it was just 10 years since he had first met Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada gave one of his endearing little sideways nods of assent. Yes, I never said that you have to give up this, you have to do that. Never said. Then gradually, chaito darpana marjanam. When the heart becomes cleansed, then little. So there is no hopelessness. So that was Prabhupada's very deliberate intent. Of course, he was, you know, right from the very beginning, cooking in 26 Second Avenue. He started the Sunday Feast program. And in the week time also, so many young men started coming. And so Prabhupada was feeding them. So every day, Prabhupada was personally cooking for at least 20 men. And then in the weekends, he was cooking for up to 200 persons. So all personally done by Prabhupada. So he knew the potency of prasadam. And when I joined Prabhupada's party in late 75, that was one of the very first services that he gave me to do. Because I was the door guard the first couple of days. And Prabhupada was having darshans. This was at Bengali Markets, Bhagwat camp at that time also. We were at number 19, Todamol Lane, and Prabhupada was staying at number 9. So in the afternoons, a few people were coming, not many. And Prabhupada immediately had me sit at the door, and everybody that came in or out, then they had to be given some prasadam. And he was very particular about that. Because, you know, as we'll see, he said, I can speak, that will go over their heads. But if you give some prasadam, that's something tangible. So he was always insistent there had to be some prasadam there to hand out. And after a couple of days, we went to Vrindavan. And the same thing there. Every afternoon, there'd be 50, 60 people coming for darshans. And we would sit at the doorway with a glass jar full of para. Para is a, I don't know what the milk, it's a milk sweet. That it's a specialty from Vrindavan. So we would sit there and pass out the para. And again, also, any program that Prabhupada had, there had to be prasadam distributed there. So, let's see what we've got here. On March the 12th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Mayapur, because he was there for the Gopurnima festival. He stayed about 2 months in Mayapur that year. And devotees were crowding into Prabhupada's rooms in the early evenings, eager to get as much association with his divine grace as possible. Many of them have worked hard all year round, selling books and doing other temple duties. And their visit to the Holy Dham, and especially the opportunity to see Srila Prabhupada, makes it all worthwhile. This evening was no exception. The atmosphere couldn't have been more congenial. Prabhupada was very relaxed and enjoyed the company of his faithful disciples. He is always aware and deeply appreciative of the sacrifices that they're making on his behalf. Although he's our spiritual master and our instructor in every aspect of life, his dealings with us are full of respect and compassion. A few minutes with Srila Prabhupada can change anybody's life. Somebody brought in some sweets to be handed out, so I put them to one side. Srila Prabhupada glanced over, concerned as ever that his guests received some of the prasadam. Oh, you are not distributing? So I was thinking I'd give them out at the end, but so I put them at one side of his desk there. Well, there's so many devotees, I said. I thought I would give out the sweets when everybody leaves. They will never leave, Prabhupada said, laughing. All the devotees cheered. Jai Prabhupada. Even a few simple words from him are enough to completely capture everybody's heart. So it was a nice feature. You go in Prabhupada's room and you get, you know, some sweets. Another example was when he did a pandal at the end of the year in 1975. On Christmas Day, we flew up to Ahmedabad, and then we went to a village called Sanand. So there was a King of Sanand. It's a small place, 20,000 people. But he was a pious man, and he used to like to invite sadhus to come and hold programs. And he would host them at his palace. So Prabhupada had been invited to do a 5-day pandal in Sanand. Yasamati Nandana Prabhu, our Gujarati Yasamati Nandana, he had arranged for this large pandal tent to be erected and programs to be held for the next 5 days. At 8:30 p.m., Prabhupada went there to the grounds to lecture. About 5,000 people turned out, impressive for a town with a population of only 21,000. So about a quarter of the population was there to hear Prabhupada. So after a brief kirtan, Prabhupada gave a well-received 50-minute lecture in Hindi, which Yasamati Nandana translated into Gujarati. Then, on leaving the pandal area, we were going out in the car, Prabhupada stopped the car at the entrance, and he inquired whether all the visitors were being given prasadam. So, after a big program, but still that was where his mind was. So he was shown some very small white sugar beads, which are commonly given out at many temples. If you go around many Indian, you get these little bubbly kind of sugary, you know, bead things. Prabhupada wasn't very impressed, but he seemed to think that it was better than nothing. That we arrived back at the palace at about 10:30 p.m. So then the next morning, December the 26th, Prabhupada went for his morning walk. They took us to the outskirts of Sanand, and it's very flat land, and there were growing tobacco plants everywhere, cash crops. So we were walking through the fields. So the talk of the crops brought up the question of prasadam distribution at the program. Prabhupada is very keen to see that sumptuous prasadam is given out whenever we have a gathering. He said that otherwise ordinary people will not be attracted. Although he is lecturing strongly at the program, he is aware that what he says will inevitably go over the heads of most of the people. Therefore, he told the local devotees, "Then accept this program, distribution of prasadam. Then we can go everywhere, the whole day program, kirtan and distribution. Simply dry philosophy, what will people understand?" So, Prabhupada was the one that was giving the philosophy. He was the one that's speaking. But he knew most of these people, it won't go in. Give them something tangible that they can appreciate, some prasadam. So he was insistent on that. Around about the same time, in mid-December of 75, Prabhupada got a letter from Mahamsa Swami. He was preaching in South India, and at that time they were just constructing the Hyderabad temple. So they were building that, and at the same time doing some preaching in, you know, the southern areas. So he gave a progress report on Hyderabad, where another new temple is steadily being built. Work has already begun on raising the dome. The project is costing 75,000 rupees a month, which the devotees are collecting throughout South India. Mahamsa also reported on four small books, the Sri Upanishad, the Raja Vidya, Perfection of Yoga, and Matchless Gifts, have now been translated into Telugu. Prabhupada, though, was most happy to hear about a small bullock cart traveling Sankirtan party. Mahamsa wrote, "The bullock cart party, only three devotees, were very successful on their second attempt. They collected lots of rice, distributed prasadam and small literatures, held evening programs, and they are sleeping under a different tree every night. They are so thrilled and enthusiastic. They love this kind of preaching work. Now I'm giving them a portable sound system and more equipment and one more devotee, and I'm sending them immediately on a massive voyage on the bullock cart all the way to the Mayapur festival." So that's like about from Hyderabad to Mayapur, it's about 1,500 kilometers. So he was sending this party, you know, on this bullock cart to get there. And they actually made it. They made it just the day before Gaur Purnima. I remember when they came in. So Prabhupada replied enthusiastically, "Naturally, the Sankirtan men traveling with the bullock cart is blissful. It is Lord Chaitanya's engagement. Lord Chaitanya personally traveled all over India for 6 years. His program was simply kirtan and prasadam. Lord Chaitanya never spoke philosophy in public. When he met big scholars like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, then he spoke philosophy. Otherwise, for the mass of people, kirtan and prasadam distribution. So continue this program. It is very pleasing to Lord Chaitanya." So, of course, Prabhupada was very expert at entertaining his guests with prasadam. Because that's a standard thing anywhere. When you go all over the world, if you meet with someone, you have a meal with them. There's an intimacy that's involved, you know, in sharing a meal with someone. So Prabhupada knew that, but he was very expert as a host. And I saw there was a couple of occasions when he had special guests come and he entertained them with first-class prasadam. So one example of that was this man, Mr. Chowdhury. So when we were leaving New Delhi, we were sitting in the departure hall. And this gentleman came up, he introduced himself, he sat and talked to Prabhupada for about 15 minutes, gave him his card, and it turned out that he was working in Writers' Building in Calcutta. Writers' Building is the government secretariat. It's where all the government offices are. And this man was in the land department of Writers' Building in Calcutta. So Prabhupada had an idea that he wanted to, you know, build a big scheme in Mayapur. And he had an idea about acquiring the land there to do that scheme. He wanted about 300 acres. So in India, there's a land sealing act. Nobody's allowed to own more than 24 acres. So you have to get special exemption from the government. So at that time, of course, there was a Congress Party government in West Bengal. And, you know, the communist government had not yet come into power at that point. So Prabhupada was hopeful that if we applied for an acquisition order, then the government would actually, you know, an acquisition means the government comes in, they set the price, and they tell the farmers, now you have to sell your land for this project. So that was what Prabhupada wanted to do. He wanted to get about 300 acres. So he took it that it was Krishna's arrangement that we met this man, Mr. Chowdhury, in the New Delhi airport there. So then on December the 27th, when we were in Sanand, during mail time, as Prabhupada relaxed up on the roof, he dictated a letter to Jayapataka Swami in Mayapur. He enclosed an introductory letter for him to meet with Mr. Chowdhury, the gentleman that we had met at the airport. Seeing that meeting as Krishna's arrangement, Prabhupada requested Jayapataka to visit him personally with prasadam and flowers and invite him to Mayapur. He wants Jayapataka to enlist his help in getting the government to acquire the land for our ISKCON Mayapur development scheme. He also suggested that Mr. Chowdhury might be able to help Jayapataka Maharaj, who is an American, with his application for Indian citizenship. Of course, later on he did get his Indian passport. So that was in end of December. Then early 1st of February, as promised, Mr. Chowdhury and his family arrived in Mayapur. So Jayapataka went to see him, gave him prasadam and some garlands. He was very happy, and he came out to see Prabhupada in Mayapur. Prabhupada happily received him like a father receiving his son. He showed him the plans for the Vedic city and the land that he wants the government to acquire for the project. Then with Jayapataka Swami, he looked out over the whole compound. So Jayapataka Maharaj took him around, showed him our ISKCON Mayapur scheme. Mr. Chowdhury promised to help Jayapataka Maharaj in every way possible to get the application approved. He clearly has the highest regard for Srila Prabhupada, and he was impressed with the Mayapur project. His wife was even more enthusiastic, and she challenged her husband that if he is truly a Hindu, then he must help Srila Prabhupada. So Mr. and Mrs. Chowdhury took lunch on the balcony of the Lotus building. As we served them sumptuous prasadam, Srila Prabhupada sat to one side in a chair, hosting them graciously. While they ate, he kept up a running conversation, light and jolly, thus allowing them to eat without any distraction. So there's an art, you know, to serving prasadam. Entertain somebody, no heavy subject matters, yeah, no management or politics or this or that. When you eat, you should be relaxed, you should be happy, and then you can digest very nicely and you can enjoy the food. So Prabhupada knew that art. So he very expertly, he was just sitting and chit-chatting. And as they were eating, he would call for another preparation. Oh, give him some of this, give him some of that, like this. And he filled them up. Yeah, that was the art. So another example, that was Mr. Chowdhury and his wife. Another example was Alan Coleman. Alan Coleman was an interesting character. He was the producer of the Krishna Conscious Happening album that was recorded in late 1966 in New York. And, of course, he distributed that record. Was the first chanting of Hare Krishna that George Harrison and the other Beatles heard. They had been playing that album for a long time, actually, before they met the devotees. So he was into chanting from there. Alan Coleman was the producer. So March 25th, 1976, about 10 years, almost 10 years after that album had been produced, an unexpected visitor turned up in the afternoon. Prabhupada was staying at that time at the, what was his name? He was staying at the house of a big businessman who owned this Laxman Sylvania light bulb company in India. You see all these light bulbs, that fellow. He had a place in Chanakapuri in Delhi, very expensive, rich area. Prabhupada was staying at his house. Laxman Agarwal, that was his name. So Alan Coleman arrived from New York. He had produced Prabhupada's first Hare Krishna record in 66. He arrived with a lady friend, and at long last, he gave Prabhupada his royalties from the record sales. They amounted to about 170,000 rupees, to which he added a personal donation of $2,000. So he paid the royalties and he gave a personal gift. So it was very nice. So although not a devotee, it was obvious that he has great admiration and respect for Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, in turn, was very happy to see him, greeting him like an old friend. He had his guests sit while we fed them sumptuous prasadam. As they ate, Prabhupada chatted very amicably with them, and he wouldn't let them go until they had eaten everything. He smiled brightly all the while, clearly delighting his guests. He is expert at entertaining and encouraging people to increase their devotional service to Lord Krishna. So that was a nice little entertainment. But the best one was when Prabhupada came to London. He had done his tour in America, and then on July 20th, he flew to London. He got very sick. We were talking about this the other night, on that night flight from New York to London. And the first two or three days that he was there, practically speaking, he spent in bed. He wasn't taking his massage. He wasn't taking his bath. He was just completely clogged up with mucus and like a heavy flu. Gradually, he started getting over it. But before we'd gone there, Prabhupada had his secretary write to George Harrison to invite him to come and see him when he arrived in London. So that meeting was arranged for July the 26th. So Prabhupada was resting in bed when George arrived. There is a standing rule that Prabhupada is never to be awoken for any reason. It didn't matter who came in. It could have been the Queen of England. They would have had to have waited. If Prabhupada was asleep, nobody was allowed to wake him up. You know, whenever he woke up himself, that was it. But for George, he said, "Now when he comes, if I'm asleep, you come in and wake me up." So sure enough, Prabhupada was resting. George arrived. So I went into the bedroom and I informed Srila Prabhupada that George had come. "Yes, bring him immediately," he said. And then rather than go into the sitting room, he simply sat up in his bed and he had George brought into the bedroom. When he entered, Prabhupada had a seat brought for him, and he instructed us to feed him some prasadam. So right there in the bedroom, then, you know, we sat him down, we brought in a few tables, there were a few senior men. Gurudas was there, of course, he was an old friend. Mukunda was there, another old friend. And then Jaitirtha, a few others like that. So we set up small tables for George and some of the senior men. And then Prabhupada engaged him in light conversation as they ate. All the while, Prabhupada attentively supervised the serving of the prasadam. Noticing which preparations George showed a taste for, he kept telling us to give him more. At the same time, he kept him at ease with sweet words. "Hare Krishna, oh, give him two more samosas. He likes them." "Yes, all these boys and girls are so nicely qualified for Krishna's service." George expressed pleasure at seeing his old friends. "They're looking better and better all the time. It's nice for me to see Gurudas. He's turning into a mountain." It was rather big at that point. George ate steadily with Prabhupada ensuring that he had enough. When he offered him more samosas, George laughed. "I've got plenty, thanks." And Prabhupada also laughed. "Prasadam, we can eat it up to the neck. There is no harm. You'll never get indigestion. You've got some fruits?" Prabhupada continued to encourage him, offering him cauliflower, mango drink, and other preparations. "Take a little." George was doing his best, responding warmly to Prabhupada's hospitality. "I can't finish," he laughed. He said that he had been sick with jaundice recently. He had turned yellow, and his liver had been affected. He thought that he had contracted it from eating a Chinese takeaway food. Prabhupada advised him that he should cook simple foods for himself. As conversations are wont to do, theirs meandered from one subject to another. Prabhupada mentioned our growing number of Govinda's restaurants, and he asked George if he had met Ambarish Prabhu. So just before, in June, then Ambarish and Shrutakirti Prabhus had come to see Prabhupada when he arrived in Detroit. And at that time, they'd just gone up to Boston. And Ambarish was buying this restaurant just around the corner. actually, from Commonwealth Avenue, where the temple was, and they'd come to see Prabhupada. Shrutakirti was going to be the cook, and Ambarish was the financier. And they had a long discussion with Prabhupada about setting up this restaurant. So now Prabhupada was asking George if he knew Ambarish. He also filled him in on the successful New York Rathiatra. Prabhupada also told him about the Mayapur project. "We are just attempting a big planetarium in Mayapur. We have asked the government to acquire the land, 350 acres. So this negotiation is going on, and we shall give a Vedic planetarium." Gurudas furnished some of the details. "The planetarium will be 350 feet high and show the cosmology of the spiritual world." And Prabhupada added, "The construction will be like your Washington Capitol, like that." "Oh, a big dome?" George asked. "Yes," Prabhupada said. "Estimated 8 crores of rupees." So that was at that time. Of course, nowadays it's a lot more than that. But and still after 30 years, we're just about to build this Vedic planetarium. But at least this year, we're confident that we're actually going to start this project. And in fact, we should start putting in the piles for the foundation at the end of December this year, or early January. So, and then it will probably take about 6 or 7 years to complete that project. So things are all go at the moment. Anyway, Prabhupada was eager to tell George about this Mayapur planetarium project. It's interesting, he said, "like your Washington Capitol," as if George was an American. Of course he wasn't, he was from Liverpool, but anyway. Then Prabhupada offered him more dal and fruit. George was grinning as he said, "Oh, very good, fantastic. Well, maybe just a little bit. No, thanks. No, that's fine. Okay, that's good. Thanks. That's enough." Prabhupada smiled. "No, that watermelon, you can give him. It's just water." Prabhupada asked George if he was reading his books at all. George said that he was, mainly the Krishna book. "Mukundi gave me the new books, but there's just so much to read. I don't know how anybody could have written it. It's difficult enough to read all of that amount." Prabhupada acknowledged his appreciation. "Sometimes they are surprised how one man can write so many books, but it is Krishna's grace," he said humbly. "Otherwise, not possible. For a human being, it is not possible." As they chatted, Prabhupada ensured a steady flow of prasadam. "Pradyumna, give him a little. This one here." "No, no, please, no more," George laughed. "I'm really full. I won't have to eat for a few days." That was the signal for the finale. "Sweets," Prabhupada offered. So George smiled and he conceded. "Oh, very well. No, sweets will help you digest," Prabhupada said. So to the server, he instructed, "Don't give him 3, at least 4. With George protesting that he wouldn't be able to eat anymore, Prabhupada explained, "No, 3 is given to the enemy. According to our Indian system, if you give somebody 3, that means he's an enemy." George was a little surprised. "Oh, really? I always liked the number 3. So while waiting to be served some fruit, Prabhupada listed 3 enemies: calm, crowd, and lobe, lust, anger, and greed. "Yes, but there's a lot of nice 3s, George said. And Prabhupada agreed. "Yes, just like Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar. 3 worlds, Sankhya, Marcha, Padma, Trinity. So these are nice things." So being agreeable, that's part of entertaining. George gallantly tackled the sweets. As he downed the last one, he declared, "My compliments to the chef." While we cleared away the small tables and pots, Prabhupada thanked George for coming. "So I am very much pleased that you have taken so much trouble to come here." So it was a very, very nice exchange. Prabhupada entertaining, you know, feeding him very nice prasadam and chit-chatting here and there. And he also, during that conversation, there was some talk about books, about chanting. George said he didn't read very much, but he was always chanting. And wherever he went, he always took a Bhagavad Gita with him and his bead bag. And he had Pradyumna read out this verse that I do not know how much nectar there is in the two syllables, Krish and Na. There's that verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So when Pradyumna recited that verse, it caught George's ear. And he liked it so much that Prabhupada had Pradyumna recite it several times. And he had me record it and then immediately give the tape recording to George so that he could take it home and listen to him. And he also, he advised George, he said, when you make your records, he said, now this Sanskrit chanting, this is very pleasing to the ear. So he said, you should include this Sanskrit mantras when you make your records. So he's giving him some nice advice about how to make his records good. Anyway, so there's a couple of examples how to entertain your guests with prasadam. Now we'll talk about an example how not to entertain your guests. So this was December the 9th, 1976. Prabhupada had gone down to Hyderabad. There was a project down there. There was about 560 acres of land. So Hari Prasad Bhadruka and his family members, they'd become attracted to the Krishna consciousness movement. They had this land in a trust, and they decided they wanted to put it under ISKCON's control. So there were some technicalities. Prabhupada had visited the property in 1975 when he went down to Hyderabad for a big pandal. That was when I first met Bhagwat, actually, and Sukadev. Same trip, right? We were all there in Hyderabad. So Prabhupada, during that Hyderabad trip, he'd gone out to the farm and stayed there a couple of days. And then, so late 1976, almost 2 years later, finally, they were getting all the legal work sorted out, and they'd made this trust. So ISKCON members and also some of the Bhadruka family, they would be joint trustees. That was the idea. So we had been in Vrindavan for a couple of months, and then at the beginning of December, then we traveled down to Hyderabad. And Prabhupada had high hopes for that project. Actually, when he got in the car to leave Vrindavan, the Krishna Balaram Mandir, he got in, Jagadish was sat next to him, he was his secretary at that time. So he said, now we are going to start a new phase of this movement. And then he didn't say anything more, so Jagadish is sitting there waiting for him to say what it was. Then he asked him, he said, well, what is that, Prabhupada? And then Prabhupada said, Varnashram. So that was his idea. He was going to start this Varnashram project on this land in Hyderabad. So when we got down there, we spent a few days in the city at the temple there. And Prabhupada was told, your house is not quite ready. When it's ready, then we can go. Then after a few days, he got fed up of being in the city. And so he just decided to go out and look and see what was happening there. As soon as he got out onto the farm, that was it. Then he didn't want to go back to the city. So he settled in. There was kind of like some temporary quarters there. And Mahamsa Swami had been building this little bungalow for Prabhupada's quarters, but it wasn't quite finished. So anyway, along with Mahamsa, when Prabhupada flew down there, he took Tejas Prabhu with him. So Tejas actually, before he joined the movement, he had been a Peace Corps worker. And he had been stationed in Tamil Nadu. And he learnt Telugu. He could speak it fluently. He was also, later on, when he joined the movement, Prabhupada put him in Delhi as the temple president. And he learnt Hindi fluently also. So he was quite expert. But what he was doing with the Peace Corps movement, he was actually in charge of about 10 villages, and they were training them how to do various kinds of crop growing, rotational crop growing. So he actually knew a lot about farms and about, you know, growing things in India. So Prabhupada decided to take him down, you know, for this farm project. And then Hansaduda Swami, he was also there. He had a couple of buses that he'd brought from Germany. And he had maybe about 30 men. They were touring all over and holding programs. And he'd given some money to Mahamsa the year before to help with the development of the farm. So he came down. So these three men, they were kind of joint managers of the farm there. And it had been given the name Nunaimisharanya. So Prabhupada had given them some instructions that every evening, he said, whilst I'm there, we should have a pandal. And you have kirtan. In the daytime, you go out in the bus, you advertise in all the villages that, you know, this is Hare Krishna pandal. You invite all the villagers to come. And you feed them nice prasadam. You do some kirtan. And then gradually they'll become attracted to being devotees. Then his plan was that in different areas of the land, he was going to build small hamlets, say 6 or 7 houses. And the local farmers would be invited to come and live on our land in these houses. And each hamlet, there would be one Vishnu temple or, you know, Radha Krishna temple, but small. So the idea was they would come, they would do their regular business of farming. They would be given 1 or 2 acres that they could grow crops on and keep a cow. And they would just be devotees. So that was the Varnashram system in action. So he had this plan. So the first day they had the pandal. It wasn't so bad. About 150 villagers turned up. And they served some prasadam out. And that was it. So then the next day on December the 9th, then, as it turned out, the pandal program didn't go too well. Only about half the number of people came. The kirtan was poor and unorganized, with little participation. The villagers were left to aimlessly wander around, and none of our men seemed to be taking much interest in them. Tejas gave a short talk in Telugu, and afterwards prasadam was served. Prabhupada didn't go out for the program, but he preferred to stay in his room, leaving it to his leaders to conduct the program, seemingly unaware of what was going on outside. Yet, at about 8:30 p.m., he rang his bell. I went into his room, and he asked me to bring him some of the prasadam that was being served to our guests. I thought it was a little unusual. Because of his delicate digestion, he never usually eats the general prasadam, preferring only that which is cooked by his own staff. Nor does he eat very much this late in the evening. So I sent one of the devotees out to get him some of the prasadam. He came back, it was on a leaf plate, and then I took it into Prabhupada's room and placed it on his desk. It was just a large coagulated lump of rice, which had been plonked onto a dusty leaf plate, and it tasted as bad as it looked. It was just like a big clag. So Prabhupada broke a little bit off. As soon as it touched his lips, he spat it out. "This is poison," he declared. And he angrily demanded to know who had cooked it. I thought I'd better go out and find out for myself what was going on. After a few minutes of looking around, I returned and gave him my report. The kirtan had finished. Large numbers of our guests were standing around looking bored and ignored, and no one would touch the prasadam. In fact, most people had thrown it down on the ground. It was so inedible that I saw that even the dogs were going up, sniffing it, and walking away, refusing to eat it. So I went round the side of the goshala to where the open-air kitchen was. A couple of pits with raised mud sides blazed with ignited wood as deep metal woks balanced on the top. I was shocked as I recognized the cook. He was a sweeper that had been employed for cleaning the grounds and the toilets in the mornings. Now he stood with a beedi in his mouth, enough smoke curling from his mouth that it matched that which was curling up from the fires which he was tending. One of the devotees told me that he had seen the fellow scoop off the top layer of rice, which was well cooked, and put it aside for himself and his family. Then he sent a batch of the inedible clag to be offered to the deities. When I asked who was responsible for the arrangements, everybody said that Mahamsa was the only one who knows. And when I asked where Mahamsa was, nobody knew. I reported everything that I saw. Prabhupada was absolutely furious. He called in Jagadish, Hansaduta, and Tejas, and he demanded to know who was responsible for the bad program. He shouted at them, "The poison which was not fit for dogs to eat, we are giving to human beings. We are trying to attract them to come and live here with us, but once coming, they will never come again. They are coming for the tongue, not for hearing your sweet voice. If they want a sweet voice, then they can listen to some woman. But your kirtan will not attract them. They are coming for the prasadam, and you are giving them poison cooked by a sweeper. Materially, it is impossible to eat, and spiritually, it has no value. He berated them for over half an hour. Achyuta Grudger, the farm manager, was also called. Prabhupada demanded to know why the prasadam was so poor, simply inedible rice. Achyuta Grudger apologized, saying that he didn't have enough money for proper prasadam. Prabhupada then asked why didn't he come to Jagadish, and then he also demanded from Jagadish why he had not supplied the money. Jagadish, along with the others, was silent. They all hung their heads with little to say. Nobody seemed to want to take responsibility, all saying that everything seems to depend upon Mahamsa's presence, and without him, it was difficult to get anybody to do anything. Prabhupada was extremely annoyed with Mahamsa because he had still not returned from Hyderabad, and now it was 10 o'clock in the evening. When I was at the temple, they said he was at the farm. Now I'm at the farm, they say he's at the temple. And when I ask, why are these things going on? Nobody but Mahamsa knows. So finally, after letting them all know that he held all of them responsible, he sent everybody out and took rest. Mahamsa eventually arrived at about 11 p.m. So Prabhupada said that he would see him in the morning. So then the next morning, December the 10th, happened to be the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, and we were observing a half-day fast. So early in the morning, at 6 a.m., Prabhupada called Mahamsa in, along with other senior men. He preached to him that things must be organized in a proper fashion, otherwise, he said, everything will be a failure. He told him, I am not prepared to invest anything here if things continue as they are. You must make immediate plans for irrigation and vegetable and sugarcane crops. So he had a plan. He gave some loans, actually, to Mahamsa. They'd been working in the year. They were growing some crops. And the idea was that then they would sell those crops, make the money back, plus some profit. Then they would reinvest it and this way gradually develop the farm. But Mahamsa, when we got there, no crops were growing. All the money was spent, about 60,000 rupees, and now he was asking Prabhupada for more loans. So Prabhupada was telling him, if things continue like this, you'll get nothing. You know, I'm not going to invest anything. Then he took up last night's disaster with him, and he told him, nobody will come here because we are allowing a sweeper to cook. He was very grave. It has shocked my heart that you can allow a sweeper to cook and then offer such things to Krishna. We say that you must be second initiated, but you are allowing a sweeper to cook. This means that after 7 years, you are still a malecha, yavana. Your consciousness has not changed. We are saying, Radhikara Pakaana Vividja Bhyanjana Paramaranandi Krishna Korene Bhojana. Radhika and her gopi friends are personally cooking and making such nice arrangements for giving very palatable foodstuffs simply for pleasing Krishna. And you are offering things cooked by a sweeper. Mahamsa was apologetic. He told Srila Prabhupada that he was unable to find any devotee to do the cooking, and thus they had hired the sweeper. In fact, Mahamsa was largely unaware of who was cooking. He had gone to the city to finalize the legal documents for the formation of the new trust before Prabhupada departs, and he had left Achyuta Grudger to organize at the farm. Achyuta Grudger had foolishly engaged the hired sweeper. But Mahamsa was overall in charge, and Prabhupada held him responsible. Prabhupada told him previously, when we first arrived there, he saw what was going on. If Mahamsa was there, something happened. If he wasn't there, nothing happened. So everything was dependent on him. So Prabhupada had told him previously that he is not all pervasive like Krishna is. So he said, if he is not personally present, nothing seems to go on. So he is neither competent to manage everything himself, nor is he competent to train others to manage things properly. With displays like yesterday's, Prabhupada is becoming increasingly dissatisfied. Similarly, both Hansidutta and Tejas were present at the lethargic program, but they had also not checked the details of the arrangements. Prabhupada spoke to the small assembly. "You are all dead men," he said. "Dead men cannot preach. Whatever preaching there is will all be finished. The first principle of preaching is utsahan, enthusiasm. And without this enthusiasm, nothing will go on." So then he dropped it. So anyway, then afterwards we had a very nice program for Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disappearance day. Prabhupada had just moved into his new house, and he spoke. He actually spoke on the first four verses of the poem that he had written for his Guru Maharaj in 1936. "Adore, adore ye all the happy day, blessed than heaven, sweeter than May." So he commented on the first four of those verses. And then there was a nice feast. And when they cooked, Prabhupada went out and he personally inspected all the pots to see what they had cooked. And he approved it, so it was nice. They did something right. Anyway, so then in the evening, just before the commencement of the pandal, Prabhupada again was sitting in his room and he was talking with Jagadish. So outside, many children from the local village, they'd all gathered and they were all running around and they were chanting Gopala, Gopala, like this, and Hare Krishna. It was nice. They were all chanting with great energy and enthusiasm. And Prabhupada met with Jagadish in his house. He emphasized again and again the need to provide very nice, palatable prasadam. He told us that this was the crux of his plan to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the area. "We shall spend for that," he said. "Why miserly? There is no need of miserly. You are going to earn money by agricultural produce, so how will that money be spent? It will be utilized for Krishna's purpose. By prasadam, by chanting, by drama, somehow or another, bring them. That is our mission. Congregational chanting. Always festival, and we shall spend for that. Immediately you arrange. If there is a scarcity of money, I shall pay. But bring them somehow or another. Tomorrow I want to see at least 500 men. I came here to see that, not to sit down in a room peacefully." Referring to the upcoming Gita Pratishthan meeting in Wardha, this is a meeting that Prabhupada attended after we left Hyderabad. He said, "There also we shall inform that meeting that we want to propagate this Krishna consciousness movement, town to town, village to village, by attracting them with musical demonstration of Sankirtan, dramatic play, movie, prasadam. Somehow or another they should come to the temple, to the pandal, and congregationally chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, hear the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. And for this purpose, whatever expenditure is required, then that you should collect and spend. This is the scheme of the Hare Krishna movement." For those who are educated, he recommended distribution of literature and scholarly presentations in the schools and colleges, libraries and universities. Taking assurance from Jagadish that he had understood, he repeated his main point. "To attract them to really nice prasadam, palatable food, we shall spend. Where is the difficulty? We shall take contribution from rich persons. We shall earn it ourselves and spend it to give them very nice prasadam. As people come to join us," he said, "they could be engaged in growing their own food, making their own houses, and making their own cloth. As soon as they understand, they'll be glad to do it. And they will stop all of this nonsense, illicit sex and meat eating. Then their lives will be purified. And they'll make more and more advancement on this path. That is perfection, and that is our mission." He pointed out that people will travel miles to get a good meal from a restaurant or a hotel. "And we cannot give nice Krishna prasadam," he said. "Why? Why you cannot give? You arranged that. First class. Simply for eating they will come. So you immediately do it." When Jagadish asked what sort of prasadam that we should give, Prabhupada told him, "Give them nice prasadam by which they are attracted. It doesn't matter. khichdi, puri, kachori, laddu, whatever they are attracted, you give them that. Krishna prasadam. Don't waste. You give them nice palatable foodstuffs. You give them one finest kachori, one nice samosa, two puris. Oh, they will be very glad. So you make very, very nice prasadam. He was still agitated by last night's fiasco. What is this rubbish that the dog cannot eat even? They have done a great mistake. All rascals. I am very angry. I say that if you have got no money, I will spend. I will give you the money. Why you should make such 10th class and no food at all? It is to be thrown away. Simply a waste of the grains and energy. You engage a nice professional cook and prepare nice foodstuffs. I shall spend for that if you have got no money. Gentlemen who are coming should immediately be offered some nice prasadam. Oh, please come here. Puri, kachori, samosa. So the poor arrangement for the pandal was not the only incident of bad management. Prabhupada then referred to a disturbing incident that had occurred several days before when Dr. Sinha Ghosh had come to massage him. So this man, he was very interesting. He lived down in Kodai Canal, which is in the south of Hyderabad. It's a hill station. And he was a very expert physiotherapist. He was probably in his late 50s at this time. And he actually used to treat the Nehru family, Jawaharlal Nehru, Mrs. Gandhi, and other family members. So he was a very big man. He had met Prabhupada at the opening of the temple in Hyderabad. And he had seen the problems that he was having with his endemia. He had this swelling in his hands and legs from his kidney malfunctioning. So he promised Prabhupada that he would come and treat him. So when Prabhupada came down again in December and stayed at the farm, then he came out for about 1 week. And he was coming every day. He would spend an hour massaging Srila Prabhupada. And he was very, very expert. Prabhupada said that as soon as he touched him, he felt some relief. And he had this technique. He would massage by vibrating his hands as he was moving them up and down Prabhupada's limbs. He would vibrate his hands as well. He claimed he was vibrating at about 40 vibrations a second. I thought it was bogus because I couldn't figure out how can you tell how many times a second you're vibrating your hands. But anyway, you know, Prabhupada was pleased. I thought it was a bit of propaganda. But he did it for about a week, and he was also using hot towels as well on Prabhupada's joints. So whilst he was massaging, I was preparing the hot towels. And Prabhupada told me to learn the technique. And every time when he finished, then at the end he would finish with Prabhupada's feet. And then he would take Prabhupada's feet and he would lift them up and he would put his head underneath like this. And he would, you know, say, Jai Srila Prabhupada. And then on the last day, when he did his last massage, he took Prabhupada's feet on his head like this. He said, now I can die. He said, now let me leave this body. So he was very nice. But anyway, Prabhupada was now complaining that the doctor had come. He'd spent the morning driving out. He'd had no breakfast. He worked hard massaging Srila Prabhupada. And then when he asked, you know, give him some prasadam, there was no prasadam available. Hare Krishna. So he was saying, the doctor comes. He comes out of love, but there is no prasadam. What is this? The doctor comes, but we cannot supply him prasadam at 12 o'clock? Prabhupada reiterated the standard that he had told his managers in Vrindavan to maintain. Prasadam, as soon as they want it, they must feed some prasadam according to the position of the person. We shall spend for that. I am not hesitating to spend money, so why is the arrangement lacking? Immediately, you arrange for theirs and invite them. Don't make it childish. I want to see tomorrow many thousands of people. If you cannot make attractive, then why will they come? Then it is a failure. So you make it attractive. Whatever money is required, I shall pay. Simply theory will not help. You make such prasadam as people will come and be mad after it. So he asked for his other leaders who were still engaged outside in the kirtan, asking Jagadish whether he had written everything down so that he could repeat it to the other leaders. Jagadish assured him that he had recorded it on tape, and then he went off to bring the other leaders in. The chanting stopped, and Mahamsa Swami entered with several other men. Prabhupada spoke with him frankly and firmly, again stressing the same points. He asked Mahamsa if he was satisfied with the turnout this evening. Mahamsa admitted that he was not. Then, Prabhupada asked pointedly. Mahamsa again excused the poor arrangements. No, well, the people also, there was no advertisement that today there would be a program. So, whatever it is required, then you do that, Prabhupada told him. You give them very, very first-class prasadam. They will come simply for the tongue. Mahamsa nodded in agreement. He told Prabhupada that the local villagers like their food very spicy. Whatever they like, I do not know what they like, Prabhupada replied, but you prepare that, and they should come and eat. Whatever it may be, whatever they like, the villagers, you prepare that. If you have no money, I shall pay the money, but you attract them. They will come here to eat. Oh, very nice thing. So that is wanted. He told us that the whole beginning of his creation of ISKCON was on the basis of prasadam. I made the same thing again that he told Kirtananda. I made this movement successful simply on this love feast. They did not come to hear Hare Krishna. They came for this love feast. From the very beginning, when I was in 26 Second Avenue, every Sunday I was giving nice food stuff at least 200 men. He relaxed a bit and he reminisced about his early followers. Daily at least more than 15 or 20. I was cooking myself. So that is the beginning of my movement. The chapatis with Kirtananda. First of all, he was taking one or two, then 12. As we all laughed, and Prabhupada's slight frame shook with mirth, he recalled a story that he is especially fond of telling. There was another boy, Stridish. 22 chapatis. Stridish, can I give you? Yes. I gave him 4. Finished. Stridish, can I give you? Yes. Prabhupada laughed in fond remembrance. Very nice boy. He was eating 22. So one day there was no money. So he went, and then after some time he came back with some money. And where did you go? The shoe booth. So he'd polished shoes and then he had brought that money. So he just wandered off. Prabhupada had no money. He went off. He went on the shoe booth, polished a few people up, and then came back and gave the money to Prabhupada. So laughing again, he told us that this was how his movement had developed. Repeatedly, he told Mahamsa that providing palatable prasadam was the primary concern, telling him to hire a first-class cook and assuring him of sufficient money. He said, so long I am living, I shall go on paying. You don't be miserly. You bring devotees for eating, and then chanting, and then cinema, and then lecture, and in this way you have to develop. Not that people will come, oh, the Hare Krishna mantra is there, oh, let us go away. No, they will not come. What do they know about Hare Krishna? They will come, oh, there is nice, good prasadam distributed. Mahamsa, as compliant as ever, ventured to mention last night's failure. Somehow not quite grasping the reality. Well, some people I know, they said that yesterday the prasadam was not nice. And there was, Prabhupada cut in. He was blunt but controlled. And he said, not nice. It is not eatable even by the dogs. But you are less than the dogs if you prepare such things. I was surprised. You allowed a sweeper to cook. I was surprised. We have distribution of prasadam, not dog's food. Such rascals are here, you do not know. I do not wish to discuss any more on this point. You have murdered the whole thing in 2 days. Now, if possible, you bring them first-class prasadam, very palatable. Foodstuff means that even if he has no appetite, he'll want to eat it. That is food. Not that even when he has an appetite, that he'll forget. That is not food. He told him to grow crops like sugarcane and rice to make money for the programs. Mahamsa has spent a lot of money so far, but for no return. And Prabhupada told him to manage like a businessman. He invests money, he gets a return. Spend it for Krishna. That is wanted. There is no question of becoming a miser. I never did it. Whenever I have got a farthing, I wanted to spend it. Immediately spend. Or what I have made with this BBT, immediately 50% for printing and 50% for spending on this. Easing off a bit, Prabhupada told him, "So, whatever is done is done. Now you do it very nicely. I want to see at least 1,000 men coming from the villages." So that was quite an episode, as you can see. And unfortunately, despite all of that instruction, I mean, the emphasis, you couldn't, you know, emphasize it more than what Prabhupada said there. Within 3 weeks of Prabhupada leaving Hyderabad, and we went back up to Bombay, then in the new year, Mahamsa came up, the whole program was finished. Somewhere or another, between the three of them, Mahamsa, Tejas, and Hansaduta, they couldn't get along together, they couldn't manage it properly, and as a result, the whole program was finished, and it was never restarted. So even, you know, Prabhupada gave so much emphasis. But at least you can see anyway what Prabhupada's intention was. Somehow or another attract people, and the main thing, as we heard this morning, we saw Prabhupada on the video there, what was his class about? Yeah, the tongue. Somehow or another, attract them with the tongue. So this was his very deliberate program. Feed them prasadam. Then that way you capture somebody. And then after that, then you can give them, you know, chanting and dramas and philosophy and all the other things. But you must have first class prasadam. So anyway, another prasadam distribution failure. Bhagwat knows about this one. This was a couple of weeks after this episode. At the Kumbh Mela in Allahabad. So, just in brief, I haven't actually written this up yet. That episode in Hyderabad, that will come out in volume 6 of my diary. This is volume 5. That goes up to the end of November in 76. The next volume that I'm working on right now, I've just written up that section about that Hyderabad visit. So, the next volume will also include this visit to Allahabad. Prabhupada went there around about, we set off from Bombay, I think, on January the 10th or 11th. And we went by train overnight up to Allahabad. And then there was the Kumbh Mela there. Kumbh Mela means every year there's a Mela. Every 6 years there's an Ardha Mela. And then every 12 years there's the Kumbh Mela. So that's the big one. And this particular one in 1977, we were told, was the most auspicious in the cycle of 12 Kumbh Melas. So it was a 144-year cycle, and this was supposed to be the most auspicious Kumbh Mela then for 144 years. So Prabhupada went there, and after 4 or 5 days, although he thought he might stay up to a couple of weeks, then, somehow or another, our arrangements were not very first class. When we got there, the camp that we'd been given was way away from the main preaching area, if you like. All the big groups, they all have big, big pandals. There's like a main thoroughfare. But our place was somehow or another, it was way over some other place, underneath the bridge. In Allahabad, there's this very big viaduct, very high bridge. So our camp was there. It was a little difficult to find for a visitor. There was no electricity the first night. I remember that. The tent that Prabhupada, you know, was housed in was the wrong kind of tent. It was a summer tent instead of a winter tent. So, of course, mid-January in Allahabad, it was freezing cold, especially in the nighttime. And I remember once we settled in, there were 3 sections to the tent. So Prabhupada had his bedroom at one end, and then he had the middle section as his sitting room, and he was going to work there also. And then myself and Rameshwara, who was the visiting secretary, we were in the other end. So about 1 o'clock in the morning, Prabhupada rang the bell. I jumped out. I was freezing cold. And I went into the middle section. Prabhupada was sitting there and he had his, you know, heavy winter coat, that nice saffron one with the, you know, furry hood and everything. He had his gloves on. And there was no electricity, so he couldn't work on his books. And he was just sitting there chanting because he couldn't sleep either. And there was this wind that was howling through the tent, you know, where the flaps were. It was just blowing straight through. So Prabhupada told me, he said, it's very cold. He said, can you do something? So what we did, I woke up Hansaduda and we got the carpet that was on the floor. And somehow or another, we tied it across the entrance to the tent. And that stopped the flaps from blowing. And it kind of stopped the wind from howling through as much. And Hansaduda had in his bus, he had a gas bottle with one of these attachments like a heater, gas heater. So we brought that in. But of course, it was about, you know, waist height. And because it was gas, we couldn't lean it over on its side. So anyway, we tried it. We set it fire, and we left it there. Then I came in again after about a couple of hours to see how Prabhupada was doing. This was about 4 o'clock. And when I walked in, you know, from the waist up, the air was warm. But from the waist down, it was still freezing cold. And that where Prabhupada was sitting, the cold air was just above his head. So he got no benefit at all from, you know, from the heater. Anyway, so there were problems. Then on top of that, there was a pandal next to the living area. But because nobody could find us also, and there was no electricity the first night, so the pandal also basically was cancelled. And the intention was that Prabhupada would speak there every night. But he ended up not giving any programs in the pandal area. The only thing that really saved us was the fact that Gopal Krishna had arranged for about 30,000 Hindi books to be printed, and they were shipped to the Kumbh Mela. So the devotees, there was a lot of devotees, maybe about 70, 80 devotees. Guru Kripa was there with his party. There was a whole contingent from Mayapur. They came from Bombay, from Vrindavan, like that. So every day, the devotees were going out on Naga Sankirtan. And then they discovered that, you know, people were really, they loved the kirtan. And Achyutananda was there. He was walking around with his danda. And he had his uttariya, the top piece. So he was walking around. He had a pot in one hand. And he had his danda. And he had his uttariya. And people were coming up and simply throwing rupees into his top piece. So he would kind of shake the pot, and then they would throw their money into his top piece, and then they would give a book. So in this way, they started going out, and they started distributing, you know, several hundred books every day. So then when Prabhupada was informed of this, then he said, yes, he said, this is the only saving grace. He said, this will, you know, at least justify us being here. So he said, now you don't leave until all the books have been distributed. So there were a couple of different parties that were going out. They had a competition. And every day they would come back and report to Prabhupada how many books they had distributed. But the other big disappointment was the prasadam distribution. There was supposed to be mass, you know, prasadam distribution. There were millions of people there. But unfortunately, because Bhagwat can tell you better than I can why, somehow or another they didn't buy the boga. Or enough boga so that we could, you know, cook this prasadam every day and have this mass distribution. Because there's several million people arrived in Allahabad at the same time. And it wasn't possible to go into the town every day and, you know, buy fresh supplies. Everybody else had, you know, brought it with them at the very beginning. So our other camps, they had, you know, distribution of foodstuffs like this. Our camp, nothing. So Prabhupada was really, really disappointed. And on the last day, he left early. On the last day, he called in Bhagwat and Guru Das, and he chastised them like anything, right? For failing to arrange for this prasadam distribution. Anyway, so then we left. And we got an overnight train. That was also interesting. We met this man when we were in Bombay at the end of the year. and he happened to be the second in charge of the whole railway system for that northern area of India. And somehow or another, the devotees had omitted to book the tickets in advance. So as a result of that, when we were time to go to, you know, the Allahabad to join our camp there, we had no tickets. Then somehow or another, this man just suddenly turned up at the temple. Nice man, Mr. Gupta. And he was the second in command of the whole railway system. So when he was told, we have no tickets, we can't go, he said, don't worry. And he just added another whole carriage to the train just for our devotees. Yeah. So they had some system, you know, there was the set number of carriages. And then if needed, they could add a couple of extras. So what he did was, there was supposed to be an extra carriage that was going to be added in the next railway jurisdiction. When it went to a certain point just before Allahabad, it fell into another jurisdiction. They'd already booked to have an extra carriage put on. So what he did was he put an extra carriage on without telling them before it left Bombay so that we could travel. So when it got up to Allahabad, that jurisdiction, that the extra carriage was already there. They couldn't put theirs on. Anyway, he did it. And similarly, when we wanted to leave, because Prabhupada just decided, let's go now, we had no booking. How were we going to leave the Kumbh Mela? Millions of people were using the railway system. So again, Mr. Gupta, he'd come there, he came to the camp, and then we told him we want to leave. So he said, no worries. So he did the same thing. What he did actually was he added an extra carriage, and he had Prabhupada drive out from the camp. We didn't go to Allahabad main station, but we went to another one called, I think it was Naini. And it was before, it was just on the border of his jurisdiction and the Allahabad jurisdiction. So he had us drive just over like his railway border there. And we didn't go to the station. We actually drove down the side of the railway track for about half a mile. And I thought, where are we going? It's the middle of nowhere. And Mr. Gupta was there. He said, don't worry, it will be fine. And he had some of his men bring a set of wooden steps, big wooden steps, all the way down the railway line. So we're there in the middle of nowhere. It's dark. And we're waiting. It's about 10 o'clock at night. Then the train appears. So the train's chugging along. And then all of a sudden it stops. And he had it stop right exactly where the car was. Prabhupada just stepped out, up the steps and into the carriage. And then all the devotees got on. And then, then he told the train, okay, now off you go, like this. So it was great. It was, it was like royalty, you know, some special arrangement. Anyway, so then on that train, Prabhupada stayed up all night long. And Rameshwari was just coming to the end of his secretary stint. He had not been with Prabhupada before, you know, for such a length of time. So he was very excited, you know, and he had lots and lots of questions about preaching in America and, you know, how to conquer the American public with culture and all these things. So he stayed up the whole night talking with Prabhupada. I went to sleep because I knew that in the morning when we got to Calcutta, I had all my duties to do. But they two stayed up all night talking. I don't know exactly everything that they talked about. Rameshwara was taking notes, and maybe if somebody could contact him, they could probably find out what was said. But one of the things that was said was in reference to the prasadam. So I'm going to end with this. We're nearly out of time. But because, you know, this failure in Hyderabad, then again this failure to distribute prasadam in Allahabad, Prabhupada dictated this letter to all the temple presidents in ISKCON. This was on the train going to Calcutta. So it says, to all ISKCON temple presidents, please accept my blessings. Now you must arrange in every temple there must be sufficient stock of prasadam for distribution. You can keep first-class cooks, two or three, and they should always be engaged. Whenever any guest comes, he must get prasadam. This arrangement must be made, that the cooks prepare 10 or 20 servings at a time, puris and subji, and you can add halava and pakoras, and the visitors must be supplied immediately. Whenever a gentleman comes, he must be served. As the 20 servings are being distributed, immediately the cooks prepare another 20 servings and store it. At the end of the day, if nobody comes, then our own men can take it, so there is no loss. You cannot say, it is finished, or it is not cooked yet, or there is no supply for cooking. This must be enforced rigidly. The temple is managed by Srimati Radharani, Lakshmiji. So, why should there be want? Our philosophy is, if anybody comes, let him take prasadam, chant Hare Krishna, and be happy. Everything is being supplied by Krishna. Krishna is not poor, so why should we deny them? This should be done at any cost. There is no difficulty, it simply requires good management. At the end of the day, you may sell or give it away. If we believe that Krishna is providing and maintaining for everyone, then why should we be misers? This means losing faith in Krishna and thinking that we are the doers and the suppliers. We are confident that Krishna will supply. Let the whole world come, we can feed them. So please do this nicely and begin at once. Hoping this meets you in good health, your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, I'm just on time, right?
Thank you, Bhagavan. Hare Krishna. Let's have another round of applause for Hare Suri Prabhu. Buy all of his books. They're up in the gift shop. He has them on his own person. Selling them outside. So please help him in his endeavor to record all these fantastic accounts of intimate pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. He couldn't get more intimate. Hari Suri was living with Srila Prabhupada 24 hours a day. He was on Prabhupada's beckoning call. And he was the only one with the foresight